Welcome to Radio Dale, the podcast for independent musicians produced by Dale Speaking.
We are one of Canada's top radio promotions and digital music marketing companies.
Radio Dale features fun music facts, inside information about the music industry, and advice for artists.
Hello, Dale Speaking, this is India.
Dale Speaking, this is Roo.
Dale Speaking, this is Amber.
Ring, ring, Dale Speaking.
Still happy. We could talk about Chad's country flight. Thing. Country flight.
Only cross country flight.
Cowboy flight.
Cross country Canadian flight with a stop in Calgary.
Welcome to Radio Dale number 72.
This week in music history, you are the wind beneath Bette Midler's wings.
On Who Charted, Much and M3.
Rue's 60-second tip of the week, your own website.
For the song this week, Chad Brownlee, We Don't Walk This Road Alone.
And on the round table, music. 15 years after Napster.
Thunder! We haven't used the thunder in a while,
no.
So we're going to have to go in there.
Yeah, because it
thunder.
Is thunder. That could be a negative or a positive topic.
Because thunder's nice.
Yeah, you never know.
Who knows? You'll have to listen to find out. But before that, it's time to find out what happened this week in music history.
Well, this week in music history, let's start with today.
Oh, cool.
June 5th, 2002. And I know that we don't ever like starting out with a sad one, but I thought this was a notable one we had to point out. Dee Dee Ramone, sadly, passed away in Hollywood of a very bad thing, heroin overdose, at the age of 49. But yeah, 2002, yep. So that's
12 years ago.
So. Sad day in music history. So, but someone we need to remember and pay homage to.
Yes.
Was Dee Dee an original Ramone? Or came in later?
Oh, actually, that's a good question.
I think he came in later, Ramone. But maybe. I'm not 100% positive.
Don't ask me, I know nothing.
June 6th, 1978. June 6th is also my half birthday. Not the thing. Born on this day, Canadian drummer Jeremy Guerra from Arcade Fire, who scored the 2010 UK number one album, The Suburbs.
Actually, the world's pretty much number one album.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a UK website that I got this from, so of course they point out UK.
The UK things.
But Canadian, US,
so his everything. Real birthday is my half birthday, which means my real birthday is his half birthday.
Oh!
Mind blown!
We are in the Matrix now.
Yeah.
June 7th, 2002, Virgin Records announced that they had dropped Victoria Beckham after her debut solo album, which cost over £3 million. Now, if we're always going on British numbers here, but $5.1 million to make had only sold 50,000 copies.
Wow.
That's a number one album now.
Yes.
But we'll just put that aside. I didn't know she had a solo album, and I was a Spice Girls fan, so disappointed.
I think I remember it, but I don't think it
Everyone
was memorable.
Go to YouTube after this podcast.
Check out her album.
And check it out.
Yeah.
And I love how I say YouTube. Or iTunes. June 8th, 1967, The Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band went to number one in the UK. Cost £25,000, or $42,500, to produce the album. It was recorded over 700 hours in studio time. It was also the first album to print lyrics on the sleeve.
Oh, there you go.
The birth of lyric videos from
there
the
There you
Beatles.
Go. There you go.
The album spent 27 weeks at number one on the UK charts.
Jeez. That's insane.
Well, it's a Beatles.
Yeah.
There you go.
June 9th, 1998, the Ronettes appeared in the Supreme Court of New York for their lawsuit against producer Phil Spector.
Oh.
The Ronettes, whose hits included Be My Baby and Walking in the Rain, claimed that Spector had breached the group's 34-year-old contract, that's a long contract, by paying the members no royalties since 1963.
Ooh.
Although the Ronettes went on to win the case, the New York State Court of Appeals overturned the decision in October 2002, saying that the contract that the Ronettes signed with Spector in 1963 was still binding.
Crazy.
So he just thought he could get away with, I guess maybe when their popularity went down or something, and I have to pay them. Or he was too busy doing bad things.
Paying people sucks anyways.
Mm-hmm.
June 10th, 1989, Bette Midler went to number one on the US singles chart with You are the wind beneath my wings. I'm taking over for Dale with the random singing. Taken from the film Beaches, which was a number 5 hit in the UK. I'm pretty sure it got higher here because it played everywhere at all times.
Always.
Even the 1989 hip-hop stations were playing.
Remix. June 11, 1977. Casey and the Sunshine Band became only the second group after the Jackson 5 to achieve 4 U.S. number ones when I'm Your Boogeyman went to the top of the charts.
Nice.
So
I love Casey and the Sunshine Band.
I don't know I'm Your Boogeyman. I mean, I would know it if it came on radio, but...
Yeah.
There it is!
That was the week.
Yeah.
In music history.
It was enjoyable.
Now it is time to find out who charted.
Lots of people?
Well, that's important.
Yes. So this week, I guess to give you a bit of an idea if you haven't listened to the podcast before, on Who Charted, we just take a look at various music-related charts, whether they be Billboard, radio charts, album charts. Last week, we looked at iTunes charts. So this week, with the MMVAs creeping up on us very soon, which are the Much Music Video Awards, I thought I'd take a look at the countdown, the top 10 on the Much countdown, the top 10 on the M3 countdown. And maybe just take a look at the differences and similarities between both.
Sounds good.
Cool. Yes. So let's start with Much. Number 10, City and Color, Lonely Life. Number 9, Virginia to Vegas, featuring Alyssa Reed, We Are Stars. Number 8, One Direction, You and I. Number 7, Classified, Higher. Number 6, Aloe Black, The Man. Number 5, Down with Webster, Chills. Number 4, Iggy Azalea, Fancy. Number 3, American Authors, Best Day of My Life. Number 2, Calvin Harris, Summer. And number 1, DJ Snake featuring Lil Jon, Turn Down for What?
Turn Down for What?
Yeah. So that is Much. Mm-hmm. So now let's pop over to M3, which used to be branded as Much More Music. Mm-hmm. That is where you would, back in the day, hear Alanis Morissette or Celine Dion. Mm-hmm. Or Janet Jackson's softer hits.
Softer things, yeah.
But here we go. M3.
Okay.
Number 10, Chris Cab featuring Pharrell, Liar Liar.
Oh.
Could that be the song of the summer because it features Pharrell?
It could, actually.
Number 9, Coldplay, Magic. Number 8, Katy Perry, Birthday. Number 7, Sam Smith, Stay With Me. Number 16, also featured on the Much countdown, Calvin Harris, Summer. Number 5, Aloe Black, The Man, also featured on the Much countdown. Number 4, Headley, Crazy For You. Number 3, John Legend, All Of Me. Number 2, Beyonce, Partition. And number 1, Magic with Rude.
Oh, there you go, there's Magic.
So there is your M3 countdown, and in comparison to the Much countdown, they only share 2 songs in the top 10. And you can, just from my memory of most of these songs, you can see a difference between the two, Much being a little more, having a little more broad spectrum when it comes to CHR, some rap and things like that, where Much kind of sticks to stuff that would probably appease a bit of an older crowd, but when we say older, that's not 35 or 40, that's probably mid to upper 20s, closer to 30 probably, you know, and softer tunes.
John Legend, stuff like that.
Yeah, Sam Smith, and Magic, you know, Magic being a little more of a chill, laid-back tune. So yeah, there it is. There and MMVAs, there's quite a few nominees on this list anyway. So yeah, there you go.
There you go. And that's the big change. Much Music used to be so video-focused, and it's strange because with Much More, there were a lot of songs there I'd never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, it's shocking, you know, with how much they say, you know, in order to add a video, we need it to be on the radio, we'd love to have chart numbers, but there are a lot that make it through without being on Canadian radio or charting on Canadian radio, but they just suit Much or M3 perfectly, right? And they're able to break through that. So one good example being Sunreal.
That's
how you pronounce it. Yeah, I see his video all the time.
Yeah.
So yeah.
There you go. And now it's time for the 60-second tip of the week. And I'm going to be talking about reasons to have your own website. Now, I'm just going to go with reasons. We know what a website is. Number 1, you own it. If you build your own site, it's 100% under your control. You can put what you want and change the look of the site yourself. Number two, it's a central hub where people can find the information that you want to present. Number three, it makes you look serious, where using Tumblr, Facebook, and Reverb Nation is cool. You look more professional if you actually have your own site that you control. It's stable. Every 3 months, social media changes. Twitter doesn't look the same way as it did 3 months ago, where your Facebook or your own website, you can sort of keep looking the way you want it to look. You can sell music on the site. Sure, you can through Bandcamp, but the best place to do it is through your own site. Then you get all the money. And also, you get emails in your own name, which sounds like a little thing, but you could have info@yourbandname.com, which is a good way to reach out to people so that it looks a lot more serious. So, in 5 years ago, people were saying, just build a Tumblr site or just build a WordPress site on WordPress.com. But now people are going back to the idea that you should have your own place that you actually own everything yourself. So it's not under somebody else's control, because like today we're talking about Napster. 8 years ago, we would have been talking about MySpace, or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And you never know what's coming around the corner. But your website, there are people whose websites they built in like 98. They're still there.
Mm-hmm.
So always have your own website.
Good thought.
Yes. Love it.
Love it.
Love it.
And as an addendum, WordPress is free. So sure, you have to pay somebody to put WordPress onto a server, but to actually get WordPress, which is so easy to build a website with, you can just find a tutorial online. It's free. So you don't have to pay somebody to build a site for you anymore.
That's good to know. I like that. I like that tip, because a lot of times people are like, your website doesn't matter, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But Bob left sets.
Bob
left sets. We're talking to you.
Can't wait to hear from you, Bob. I bet you he listens.
Yeah.
There you go. So I believe we have a tune.
We have a tune.
Coming up. A tune.
A country tune.
A tune.
Tune.
So this past week, we all celebrated, or yesterday,
mm-hmm.
We celebrated Camp Day.
Yay!
And if you're not familiar with that, that is a Tim Hortons initiative,
mm-hmm.
where all the proceeds of your, is it just coffee purchases or all food
purchases?
They say
coffee purchases and donations.
Yeah, coffee purchases and donations go towards the Tim Hortons Children's Foundation, and it helps children go to camp.
Yeah.
And they throw camps and all that fun stuff. So, knowing that, an artist that we work with named Chad Brownlee, who is a Canadian Country award-winning artist, and he has been a part of the Tim Hortons Children's Foundation and been helping out with Camp Day for the past couple of years. This year, not only did he take part in Camp Day, where yesterday he performed in 4 cities in 1 day.
Yeah, that's crazy.
He started in Dartmouth, went to Toronto, Calgary, and then ended up in Langley, BC, his home, so that worked out. He performed at various Tim Hortons franchises and helped bring awareness to Camp Day. And he also, so in addition to that, he released a song called We Don't Walk This Road Alone. And all proceeds from sales of that single go towards the Tim Hortons Children's Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to YouTube and just look up the video, you'll actually see Chad in the studio. Lots of footage from, first of all, of kids at camps. But there's also footage of at the studio of him recording with a bunch of kids as well, and they sing the chorus at the end of the song. So it's a really great initiative. It was really, really great to see that happen yesterday. The lead up to it was amazing. Tennille also took part in it yesterday, another Canadian country artist. But and then right before that, Chad released his brand new album, The Fighters, and that this song, We Don't Walk This Road Alone, is included on there as well. So here's a snippet of that track.
I'm big, but the world is bigger. It won't stop, it keeps on spinning. The best thing you can do is just hold on tight, knowing that the sun.
And we're back. That was Chad Brownlee with We Don't Walk This Road Alone. And I was there yesterday when he stopped in Toronto. And there was a bunch of camp kids there singing along. It was very cool.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. There might be footage online at some point. We'll keep you posted. But today, on the roundtable, we are celebrating Hunched shoulders? An anniversary, sort of. We're sort of using an anniversary that actually is seen as kind of a dark day.
Yeah.
In the history of the music industry.
It's like the anniversary of your divorce.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. As sort of a launching point for a conversation about how music is today, specifically the industry, the record industry or the music industry. And that is that 15 years ago, Napster came to be. Right. So Napster, the quick 30-second history is Napster was the first popular application that allowed you to share music basically all over the place. But it meant that you could search everybody's computer to find a song you wanted. And so long as they were sharing it, you could then take it off a computer no matter where it was. Prior to this, you had to find somebody that had it, talk to them, convince them to send it to you, they'd send it. Mm-hmm. Now, this allowed you to essentially search like you would on modern-day iTunes and steal music that you wanted. Mm-hmm. Now, that was 15 years ago today, and at the start of 2000, Napster had 20 million users. That eventually blew up to about 50 million. By early 2000s, music basically had gone from $20 an album to unlimited access for free. So everything changed on that day. So we are going to be talking about what happened after this disruptive technology came in and essentially filled a need. People wanted to get music, but at the same time took a bite out of the music industry. Mm-hmm. So instead of going into all the legal stuff, we're going to look at specifically what happened then and then what things are like today, starting with the idea that Napster started a digital revolution. Now, do we have any thoughts on that around our round table?
Around the table.
Yeah.
You look like you look like you're about to say something.
We could have an argument. This could be our first argument episode.
Oh, no.
The thing that they call about Napster is like it was peer-to-peer, right?
Yeah.
And the thing that I like to think about this, even though, like, let's say you have the song and I take it from you. You don't know that I'm taking it from you. But I think that it would be kind of cool if you knew that I was.
Oh, I see.
And not as if I'm stealing it, but more, like, I wish that there was more of a feeling of, like, sharing songs.
I see, yeah. Because, it's more like you're dipping into each other's collections.
Thanks,
yeah.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks, goodbye. But, I mean, even now on iTunes, like, you buy a song, right? Mm-hmm. I think that it would be cool if there was a way now where it's like, Rue sent me this song, and now it's mine. You can give someone an iTunes gift card, and then you do it yourself. But I think like it would be really cool if I came home and I had an email that was like, Rue sent you this song, Amber sent you this song, and now they're in my iTunes, right? Like if they sort of switched.
Maybe they could do that at some point, yeah.
Well, maybe I just had a $1 million idea.
Yeah, well, there's that, and I think that kind of plays on, I know we're kind of, I'm taking us and moving far away from the subject, but I know that with some of it's like RDO. I think, for example, you can see what someone's listening to.
Yes. Yeah.
And is there not a way to connect with that person or and say, hey, you're listening to the new Strombolas track. I love that song.
Yeah.
So it's not so much me taking it from them and going,
then you're talking.
Thank you.
It's more of the community.
But which is cool. And that, and I think that India is taking it one step further with what she's saying for sure. But kind of when we're talking, you know, Napster.
Yeah.
Back in the day, and I used to use it.
Yeah.
I was much younger and was like, well, what is stealing? Who knows? For me, I was a music fan, but I wasn't like, again, I was young. I wasn't like owning every album the Beatles ever made. And like, but so whenever I downloaded a song, it didn't necessarily drive me to purchase anything.
Yeah.
It was, that's a cool song. I'll put it on my blank CD and listen to that on my Discman. That's what I did. And, you know, and I used Napster. I used
your floppy disk.
Yeah. Floppy disk. No, not that.
Floppy disk.
Rue is the floppy disk.
Hey.
I used floppy disks.
We did back in the 90s, I guess, for our games. But Napster, Kazaa, LimeWire, all ones that I kind of, you know, played with because my brother downloaded them. And I think what came from that, you know, that really changed, and if you know, changed the entire landscape of the music industry was iTunes.
Yeah.
Because we all know Steve Jobs saw that there was a demand for singles because
that's what people were getting on Napster.
Yeah, you could download a certain album, but it was grabbing songs. Yeah. So iTunes saw this and found a way to charge us for it.
Yeah.
So from there, I mean, without that, I don't know what would have happened, but you can't deny the fact that the digital revolution or evolution or whatever is the fact that iTunes came out of that.
Well, and that's huge. They refer to them as disruptive technologies when something comes in that's completely different than what's already happening, mm-hmm. and everybody changes what they're doing because of it.
Yeah.
And that's definitely what Napster did, because when it showed up, people reacted in one of two ways. Either they said, this is awesome, or they said, oh, this is bad, and started fighting against it. And there was definitely a digital revolution out of this. Early 2000s, the idea of getting content for free suddenly became the norm. And that's another thing that we sort of see as how things changed at the time, is that the overall attitude towards music changed.
Yeah.
Because prior to that, if I wanted a song, I would go buy the CD.
Or the single.
I used to buy a single like earlier days, like we're talking like Depeche Mode, Enjoy the Silence days.
Yeah.
But there sort of became a time where they really pushed CDs at you. They said you should buy the album, and it was harder to find singles. So if you were going on a trip to HMV, you'd pick up a whole pile of CDs. I would sometimes spend $150, $200 at a time.
Wow.
I didn't have money for anything else in my life because I was spending so much on music. Because
you're a music fan. Yeah, so hardcore.
I was pretty hardcore at buying stuff. So at the point that music suddenly became accessible and stuff you couldn't buy at the HMV that just was not available.
A lot of stuff we would download would be live material from like U2.
Yeah.
We'd be able to get stuff that was recorded in Boston.
It kind of changed how bootlegs work because you could just throw them up online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's, it just completely, like, I think, because we have a couple of topics here, and digital revolution and overall attitude are two topics that kind of tie into each other because our attitude totally plays into how that all evolved. So the expectation has come from Napster and iTunes and everything. We have the expectation that we as people are entitled to receiving this music for free. You create this music as a musician. I'm not saying this is how I feel, by the way. But you, the musician, make the music. Therefore, I should be able to get it because you make millions of dollars.
Well, yeah, and also the idea, well, prior to YouTube, I can hear it on the radio for free.
Yeah.
Or I could use my tape recorder and record it off the radio for free. Now with YouTube, I can watch it every day for free if I'd like, ignoring the fact that you're paying your service provider money to use the internet in the first place. But everything seems to be free everywhere else, so why shouldn't I be able to own it for free?
Yeah.
And why shouldn't I be able to own it right now?
And the other thing, too, is that CDs used to cost $17,
$18, $19, $20. Yeah. I remember when a CD was like, $24.99
or whatever, for a 10-song CD. But iTunes, when they came in after Napster, because we were all taking songs for free and our attitude in general towards albums changed, iTunes came and said, okay, you want singles? Here you go, 99 cents.
Yeah.
Album, $7.99, $9.99. And that's where it really, I think, affected our attitudes even more.
Yeah.
Because there's no way, and that's what pissed off record labels was, we can no longer charge people more than $1 for a song or, you know, $20 for a CD. That has been completely destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's where, you know, the arguments come in and you say, you know, the legal stuff or whatever. That all needs to go away and people need to stop bitching about that.
Yeah.
And that's why I think we've seen, you know, the biggest toll being taken on record labels through all of this.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Sales were a big part of how record labels made their money. It was pretty much all of it.
Yeah, well, they took a huge cut.
Huge cut, and then it changed the industry a lot. I guess we can kind of slowly move into the how music is today, but obviously Napster affected sales. Sales dropped like crazy.
Well, can I have a stat here.
Yeah.
So what year did Napster launch?
Launched in 99, popular in 2000. Yeah.
So between 9, and this is from pando.com, and it's an article called Who Killed the Music Industry? An Interactive Explainer. So it was a really cool article, and we'll link to it.
Mm-hmm.
Between 1999 and 2001, when Napster was operating, their revenue generated by the music industry dipped from $14.6 billion to $13.7 billion. So in the article, they discussed the time frame and how the biggest hit wasn't actually to albums.
Mm-hmm.
It was to cassette singles.
Oh, really?
So the immediate effect on albums didn't happen. Huh. It was singles. So if I'm going to get the single for free on Napster, I'm not going to go to HMV and purchase that U2 single and spend $6 on it or whatever the hell they cost.
Yeah.
So that I found fascinating because everyone's like, oh, killed the album, killed the album, killed the album. Yes.
Yeah, but
indirectly, but the immediate effect happened to singles.
To singles, interesting.
The other thing, too, at that time were cultural factors. Within, and there's some stats in there as well that I didn't write down, but about record labels releasing less albums in, I think, 2000 and 2001 compared to 1999. So less albums came out, therefore...
Less revenue.
Less revenue. Right. Yeah. And then also some big selling acts were losing popularity, like boy bands.
Okay.
They were starting to fizzle out, and those were the money makers, right? So NSYNC and Backstreet Boys were kind of had their time, right?
Yep.
So things like that also affected. So like you say, Napster affected singles, and you can take those numbers I just read to you, 14.6 billion.
But there were also other things.
But exactly. You have to think about it. Yeah, so it's easy to sit here and say,
yeah,
Napster did this, this, and this, right? So I just, and then when you were speaking of today, like switching to how things are going on.
Yeah.
In 2013, digital sales dropped for the first time in 10 years.
Interesting. And that that's maybe because of streaming music. Or could be...
It is.
Yeah. So
well, that's what they're thinking.
They're saying. But again, it could be a million other factors. Yeah. Yeah.
It could be, yeah, like, well, Lord knows, but we
can't... Lord knows? We should ask her.
Lord! But but you're right. One of the main things that people are looking at that are contributing to that... are now the introduction of streaming and music subscription services.
Which people predicted like 4 years ago is going to be the next thing. And like I know at school, at Harris, when we went to school, they were saying streaming was going to be a big thing. And it took a while to pick up.
Yeah.
But like it's obviously there, it's happening now, it's real. And people have to find new ways to make money.
Yeah. The better metric to use to measure would be the number of people who have your song. Not the number of people who paid for it. Because, I mean, essentially it's measuring the same thing, right?
Yeah.
If you know, like, the number of sales, you know how many people. If you know the number of, like, buyers or thieves or...
Yeah, just everything.
Subscription people, then...
Looking at plays and everything. I know a few charts are trying to bring in streaming and YouTube views into the charts as well. As sort of, like, an aside to how downloading can work for you, which is a horrible thing to say... But part of the reason people realized how popular Game of Thrones was as a TV show is that it was the most downloaded TV show.
Oh,
so,
for free.
For free. People were taking it for free.
Yeah.
But at that point, it was leading to book sales and leading to merchandise sales and all that kind of stuff.
If you like Game of Thrones, there's a store on King West right now between Spadina and... John,
yeah,
and it has 50% off all Games of Thrones merchandise.
There you go. And see, like, people go ape for it.
Well, it's going to your point, sales are down, but revenue is up.
Revenue is up.
So something is working somewhere, but it's not with sales, and we all know that.
Well, and to go on with today, what's going on today, like you said, maybe we should be looking at who has your song as opposed to sales. One thing Napster, I guess, indirectly led to after 15 years is that giving your music away for free is basically a strategy.
Yeah.
It's a way to get your music into hand so you can build a fan base that will then go to your shows and buy your merch and maybe even buy the CD they got for free in a physical copy because they got it digitally for free on the internet. They want the physical copy or the vinyl.
Yeah.
A lot of people like to buy vinyl and they don't even really play it. They just purchase it because they want to copy the album on their shelf.
And it's like your keepsake then.
A keepsake,
it's your special,
exactly.
You know.
You get that signed by the artist at the show or something like that. So the idea of free music is now actually something people will use to get more exposure.
Yeah.
Also an interesting side effect of Napster is at the time of Napster, artists lived on Much Music or MTV. They lived on the radio. They were in print. You saw ads for them in print and everything. Now they live online. And artists, basically, everything is online and everything else is kind of an aside. Where 15 years ago, that would be kind of strange.
Mm-hmm.
I think I remember in 96 or 97, maybe 96, I had gone to a friend's house who had the net. So it was actually probably 95 or 94. And I went to, do you remember the band Ween?
Yes.
Yeah. They had a website, and they had everything available. Like, you could see everything on a website. You could stream music. It was awful to stream at the time. But they had all their tour dates and everything, and they were living online at the time. And not very many bands did that.
Mm-hmm.
On another side, filmmakers like Kevin Smith would have boards where people could ask him questions and he would actually answer directly to them.
Yeah.
So people were sort of starting that 20 years ago, but really it didn't kick in until suddenly people realized everybody's going online to get their music through Napster or through other services. So we have to be online because that's where everybody is.
I think, in all honesty, I know we're talking about physical albums and things like that, but for me, I think the day is not far where they're going to be obsolete. And they're going to be like the vinyl where you print 1,000 copies of the album, and that's going to be the nostalgic little piece that, you know, if you spend $400, you'll get that and you get to go to a meet and greet at a show or something, right? Like that, to me, we are in a world of singles, and if we are in a world of albums, they're digital. It's, again, yes, digital sales are down, but that means it's we're in a world of digital sales, we're in a world of streaming.
Yeah.
And you have to figure out a way to monetize that, so whether you're streaming stuff on, your stuff's just up on YouTube, because that's the number one place people are going right now.
Yeah, to, that's where to the new radio.
To consume music is YouTube. In Canada, we've already done podcasts about these things, but things are about to change here with the introduction of Spotify very soon, which is a music streaming service.
Nope.
So I don't see the album, physical album being as, because we were also talking about the death of the record store. And this is all, and everything we're saying spirals from the introduction of Napster. But I don't look, I know that, you know, we can sit here and people are like whining about it and stuff like that, but in all honesty, it is what it is, and I feel like if Napster didn't happen, this was going to happen anyway.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
It's inevitable.
One of the things we're not really going to touch on, but maybe a thought experiment for people out there is how labels and how companies could have reacted when Napster came out differently that might have maybe given more life to it. Now, I don't really have an answer for that, but their reaction was to fight it and basically act like digital is not important.
And your labels were the first one to fight it. They fought it the longest. And who's the one suffering the most from Napster?
It's the labels.
Labels. And we're talking the majors.
Yes.
Because there were four. And now there are three.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind.
Another, I'm just having thoughts. But you were talking about the death of the album, which I find funny because there's also like the rise of the sort of purists and people trying new things.
Yeah.
I see more cassette albums at places like Sonic Boom in Toronto and record stores than I've ever seen, like new ones being released.
I would love to. Which I think is hilarious. Again.
Yeah.
But I wonder, like, just as another thing, maybe people can research, when like vinyl came out, I wonder if there were any purists that like went and put their music on cylinders. Like, because it's weird, people are stepping back. Everybody's moving towards digital.
Or like an 8-track.
Or an 8-track or something like, because the Bare Naked Ladies released an 8-track at one point.
Yeah. Everyone does the
sort of step back thing.
Stuff, yeah.
So it's interesting that CDs, cassette tapes, and vinyl are all still being sold today, even though they're basically outdated technology now.
So I guess we can kind of recap, and let's just kind of Napster, you know, in my head, Napster happened, people fought it, the people who fought it are the ones that are suffering the most, the people that accepted it, you know,
have adapted,
evolved, things are changing, they're staying on top of it, Steve Jobs did what he did, and through the introduction of iTunes, you got the iPod, and I don't need to list anything else because we all know, we probably all own a piece of Apple. But I think it is very interesting, and it's no different than when 8-track, you know, they no longer created 8-track systems, so you can't listen to 8-tracks.
Yeah.
No different than the death of vinyl. It's no different than any of that. It's a new way of listening, and I'm going to sound like Bob Lefsetz, but let's shut up about Napster.
Yep.
Let's shut up about the album. Let's move on. Let's adapt, and anyone fighting it is going to...
And it's about being creative, too, right?
Like,
people are coming up with new creative ways to sell their music, to reach their fans and everything, instead of just an old model where it's like, plug in, go.
Yeah.
Plug in, the new artists, go. Labels obviously aren't doing artist development anymore, but they're leaving that to, like, even people like us, like Dale Speaking. We occasionally work with artists almost more on an artist development level than on just working with radio or digital.
Yeah.
And there are just people stepping in to fill the holes that are being left.
Yeah.
So, last quick thought. What do you think would have happened if Napster was never created, Amber?
probably the same thing would have happened, just would have taken longer, maybe.
Mm-hmm. People might have fought against iTunes, and then it would have been like, because, you know, you resist the first thing still, but then maybe there would be a different company that's bigger than iTunes now if they had the same things, but Napster's not completely gone. I want people to also to know that.
It was bought by Rhapsody.
Yeah, so I went, like, you know, I was looking online, and if you go to the Napster website now, it's Rhapsody, so it's essentially... It's still there.
Is it free downloading?
It's now a subscription.
Yeah.
But if they have a 30-day free trial. So I was kind of like interested in trying it because I thought, you know, it's kind of cooler to say I bought it on, you know, the old Napster. I bought it on Rhapsody than I bought it on iTunes, you know. Yeah. I just think it's cool to be different and, you know, why not support the original company? Yep. Even though it's not really the original company, but it's,
I get that.
Yeah. I think, you know, go to the people that bought it up.
And throw some money their way.
Sure, why not?
In my case...
Apple doesn't need your money.
I think if Napster never happened, people always think about the argument is, look what it did to the music industry. My weird alternate world thought is if Napster never happened, the industry might be worse off now than it was.
Yeah.
For all we know, it might have collapsed. And all we have right now is spoken word cassettes from scientists.
All music has been removed from the industry.
Music may be
gone.
Music
is illegal.
Music might be illegal at this point if it wasn't for Napster. That's my...
Thank you, Napster. Thank you.
We'll be in trouble for that one. But there you go. That's our rambling roundtable musings.
Ooh, I like rambling Napster. Roundtable.
Yeah, there we go. The rambling roundtable. The rambling IKEA desk.
Yes, roundtable.
So, there we go. 15 years. We now never have to talk about Napster again. Done.
Done.
Thank you for listening.
Doing this.
I'm done.
You're done? We're done. Good. See you guys next week.
Yeah.
Bye. Let's all wave.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Radio Dale. You can find out more about Dale Speaking at www.dalespeaking.com.
We're also on Twitter at Dale_speaking.
We're also on Facebook. Just look under Dale Speaking.
And email us at radiodale@dalespeaking.com.